This podcast is sponsored by Stratus Foods. Stratus Foods is the industry partner you can depend on when you're looking for the very best in fats and oils. Our team of expert researchers, developers, and innovators have helped countless businesses just like yours bring their most delicious menus to life. With products that are reliable, sustainable, and ready to meet any challenge, you can fry, bake, saute, and grill with confidence. Stratus Foods, we've got you covered. Hey, Holly popping in here. Have you registered for Create yet? It's our live event where you can rub elbows with other restaurant professionals and learn from some of your peers, no matter if you have 10 units or 10,000. For loyal listeners of this podcast who are restaurant operators, we're excited to announce that you can register for free. That's right, free. That's a $550 value at no charge for you. Just go to create.nrn.com and use the promo code EXTRASERVING, one word, at checkout. Hi, and welcome to Extra Serving, a Nation's Restaurant News podcast. I'm your host, Holly Petrie. Today on the pod, we're going to be talking about the earnings palooza we've seen so far and our big takeaways, plus the return of Taco Bell's Mexican pizza. Later on, you'll hear from Green District's Jordan Depke and Chris Furlow. On Takeaway with Sam Okus, Sam spoke with Jeff Applebaum from Salted about what it means to be a digital native restaurant company and how Salted wants to be the leader in that space. And NRN has a brand new podcast, First Bite, the daily morning podcast from NRN. Every day we'll be covering the day's top headlines, as well as providing a deeper dive into one of the stories with an NRN editor. And now it's time to introduce my co-host, Singular.
The one and only. It's me, Sam Okus, editor-in-chief of Nation's Restaurant News. You know, I was just reflecting on how you pivot from official podcast Holly voice to regular Holly talking voice, and it's just... I find it funny.
I really try to like have an official podcast voice, but I can't really keep it up for that long. So I try to like, you know, I'm trying to be a professional, but I'm also, I can't be a professional for that long. You know, I can only be professional for so long.
As we all on our team know so well, you cannot be a professional for that long. Yes.
I mean, it can only hold up for so long. It's just, it hurts my body.
All right, well, I mean, next week you can just try it peppier. Hello, this is Holly Petrie, Nation's Restaurant News.
Well, that hurts my soul.
All right. Just merge the two. Try to find somewhere in between.
You don't like my podcast voice?
Oh, it's fine.
Oh, fine.
I'm just encouraging some more pep listeners. In that step is all.
Listeners, he just said fine. Oh.
It's fine.
Oh.
Let me tell you about what it takes to have a podcast voice, Holly. You've got to talk normally, but with some enthusiasm.
Daggers.
I'm going to write the book. I'm going to write the book on how to have a podcast voice.
Anyway. Oh, yeah? How's your other book coming?
Just fine, thanks.
Yeah. I'll bring that up. I'll bring that up.
My little pet project. Hey, you try having two kids.
No, thanks. I'm good.
It's hard.
Yeah, I'm really good. Thank you, though.
Okay, great.
Oh, we're getting off the rails already. We were talking about the Emperor's New Groove before we got on, so we were already pre-off the rails.
Yeah, we don't need to bring that back into the conversation unless you really want to talk about some of the greatest animated movies of all time. But, you know, maybe for another pod.
Well, what do you think is the greatest animated movie of all time?
Ooh, geez. Well, would really have to, I mean, there's a lot of thought that goes into that, right? Because are you looking for storytelling? Are you looking for humor? Are you looking for animation? I mean, you could pull a different movie for all of those. If you go for like the total package, I mean, Pixar movies, you really can't go too wrong. Finding Nemo used to be, I think, the answer for me, but as I watch it more with my kids now, I'm like, maybe not. I've come around more to The Incredibles. I didn't care for it when I didn't have kids, but now that my kids are into it, I've sort of seen the light on that movie. My son is obsessed with Toy Story. I have seen the four Toy Story movies collectively probably 30 to 40 times. It's insane. But those are darn good movies. I don't know if I would say best, but they are very, very good. So yeah, lots to choose from. I don't know. I'll have to do a ranking. Maybe I'll bring that to the podcast next week. Official Sam Okus ranking of the best animated movies of all time.
You know what? I think you should. I think you should make a list. I think you should have a bracket system. I think we should bracket these movies. I think we should really put them head to head. I think we got to make it a contest.
I assume that's what everybody listening right now is coming to this podcast for, is to know what our opinions are on animated movies. It does feel like we should throw up a social media poll or something. What is the best animated movie of all time? Although if we really want to make it interesting and topical, what is the best animated movie that includes restaurants? Of course, we got to talk about Ratatouille. I mean,
I was just thinking that.
Yeah.
Well, what's another one that includes food?
I was going to say, I think it's the one and only. I mean, there's got to be other. There's food included in other animated movies. All right, I'm going to put some thought into it for the next week, and we'll revisit.
Yeah, put some thought into what animated movies include food, because that seems a very important element. I mean, obviously Ratatouille. Yeah, write it down.
No, I'm Googling it with food. Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs. That's underrated. Very
good. That's a good one. That's a good film. Oh, James and the Giant Peach. That has food.
James and the Giant Peach. Okay, that's an old school. That's like really throwing it back.
No, what's his face? Tim Burton made a version, I think.
Like a real people?
No, like an animated version, I think.
No, I know, but like in the 90s.
Oh, excuse me.
Well, it's like 30 years ago. You should know.
Don't be aging me up.
Oh, that's right. You wouldn't remember that movie because you weren't born yet.
Don't be aging me up to 30 yet. That's not happening.
Let's see here. You know what? Other than that, there's a link here that is 10 foods made iconic. Oh, of course, with Lady and the Tramp with its spaghetti.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
All right. We're probably going a little bit too off the rails here. Oh, right. Princess and the Frog. Princess and the Frog. Her dream is to own a restaurant, right?
Yes, well, they have beignets. Yes. Oh, they have beignets. Mm-hmm. Oh, I love beignets.
That's a good one. This link actually calls out Emperor's New Groove for Kronk's spinach puffs.
You know what was really good? We had Popeye's beignets, and they were delicious. We had that for a Menu Tracker segment recently. Popeye's made beignets. They were like filled with like a berry compote. They were absolutely incredible. I have to say, I was so impressed.
Beignets are great. Beignets are
but they're from Popeye's.
Yeah, I mean, hey, kudos to them.
And they were delivered.
Yeah.
Like, it was fried donuts, basically, delivered. Covered in powdered sugar, and they still held up. I was so impressed.
Good job, Popeyes.
Good job, Popeyes. I mean, I was absolutely astounded. See, I got back to food. We got
you
back
brought
there.
Us back around.
I Thank brought you. Us back around. All right, so let's talk about news now. We've gotten off the rails. Poor Leanne's going to listen to this and just be like, they're lost without me. So shout out Leanne.
And it is true. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Shout out Leanne. We are lost without you. So we had an earnings palooza this week. There's even more earnings that came in while we were gone. I've had some of our writers messaging me while we were recording to get some tidbits about earnings that we were kind of missing because we have had earnings going on while we've been on this call. So
here we are in real time, bringing the news to you
in real time,
off the presses. Yeah.
So Starbucks reported, they were talking a lot about, I mean, they had a record-breaking year, but they talked a lot about people. Especially in light of unionization. Yum had a really challenging quarter, but was boosted a lot by Taco Bell's Mexican pizza, which we will talk about later. It's very exciting for me. Papa John's momentum slowed. They had price increases. A lot of people talked about price increases, which we talked about last week a little bit with menu hikes. So, I mean, what were some of your big takeaways from this earnings palooza, which I keep saying, but I love the word palooza.
And Lollapalooza, the originator of the phrase, was just like last week, wasn't it? So,
is that really the originator of the phrase?
Very timely. has to be, right? I mean, what other paloozas are there officially?
There can't just be like a word, palooza?
No. I mean, what is Lala? Like, if they, right? Like, if they made a palooza for Lala, I don't know. Okay, now we're really going crazy. Okay, let's talk about the earnings. Let's start with Starbucks, because I do think it is funny that they emphasized the employees so much in their latest earnings report, because of course this has been a sore subject as it relates to unionization. We've called them out a few times here on this podcast because this is a company that has historically been very well known for taking care of its employees, for really investing in culture. Of course, they have a stock option for employees. I mean, they've got all this stuff that they have been known for, and for them to be the ones where unionization really took root in a big way was, I guess, surprising, and seemed to signal that Starbucks had maybe lost its way as it related to its people. So Starbucks now saying that they're going to revisit that part of it, and Schultz was talking about showing their employees more empathy and getting kind of down at their level to understand what are the challenges for team members. And it seems like they've really boiled it down to improving the store experience, improving the employee experience, you know, digital innovations that can help make things perhaps a little bit more efficient so employees are not overwhelmed. But then also training, talk about doing more training for their employees and finding ways to really improve the quality of their employees so that, again, that they don't become, you know, perhaps overwhelmed or dissatisfied with the position. They're also talking about increasing wages. So all these things they're trying to throw at their employees to improve the experience, I'm sure with the hope that it would make employees think twice about pursuing a union. It probably didn't hurt that they actually had some pretty good sales to report. Sales are up pretty significantly for Starbucks. And so I'm sure they're hoping to build off that momentum into some more positive headlines than they've had recently, which it's been pretty tough going for them for the last really couple of years.
They had record-breaking sales, actually.
Yeah, what are the numbers here? Was it 8%?
They grew 9% domestically in the U.S., their revenues.
I was so close.
You were pretty 9%. Close.
Thanks. I think they needed that win. One really interesting thing that I think surprised the whole world when they said this, because I saw this popping off on social media and in consumer media, was that 75% of their sales in the latest quarter were cold beverages, which, I mean, that blows my mind. Now, granted, it is summer, so there's probably just a much higher demand for cold beverages, of course, in the warmer months. But still, when you just think about Starbucks really being known as that early morning cup of coffee on your way to work kind of thing. Now, as somebody who is really addicted to coffee in the morning, I cannot do without my cup of coffee or two in the morning. I cannot fathom having a cold iced coffee in the morning. That's just like not my habit. I'm in the minority here on this call, but,
my iced coffee is right here. It's ready to go.
All right. Well, there you go. Okay. So maybe I am in the minority. I don't know. Hot coffee for me, winter, summer, doesn't matter. I need a cup of hot coffee in the morning. To me, an iced coffee is like a treat. Because if I go to Starbucks and I get, you know, Frappuccino or something, like I'm going for like as a afternoon snack. You know what I mean?
Do you get whipped cream on it too?
Oh, sure. Well, yeah. Well, exactly. So there you go. It's a treat. It's a sweet something. And I'm a pretty straightforward coffee and cream kind of guy. No sugar in the morning. But the afternoon, if I need a little pick-me-up, that's when I'm going for that, you know, ice cold treat kind of deal. So I don't know if I am a case study in Starbucks customer. I don't go to Starbucks that often because I'm not regularly passing them like a lot of people. But yeah, so for me, that when I saw that result, I'm like, wow, either a lot of people really just like cold coffee, iced coffee at all times, doesn't matter, or maybe Starbucks is really boosting its day part sales and is finding that folks are coming in more often for a treat or something. I don't know, but you're clearly an example of somebody who drinks iced coffee in the morning. So,
Well, so for me, it's a sign of the younger demographic. So everybody I know and everybody I see on social media and like my TikTok and Instagram are all and my friends all drink iced coffee and drink it year round. And so that's
why?
Something that
like what's the you and I are what 7 years apart or something like that. How is there some generational divide that I am very traditional and drink a hot cup of coffee in the morning and you and your friends don't? I don't get that.
Well, so hot coffee's not as good for your stomach. And I feel like all of my generation has stomach issues. And I feel like it's just like, it gives you like heartburn instantly. And so I feel like a lot of people just don't want that heartburn instantly. Okay. I think that's so what it is.
My generation was just like, screw it. I don't care. I'm going to go for the heartburn and for the bad stomach. Or
I kind of think that's what it is.
Maybe my generation is just more healthy. I don't know. I got nothing for you. I don't experience heartburn first thing in the morning with my cup of coffee, but
I think that's what I've been, that's what I see all over social media is that that's what the root of it is. That's what I see on TikTok and everything. And that's what, I mean, that's, that seems to be the root of the cause, but a lot of people also just drink iced coffee because they like it better.
Hold on a second. Wait 1 second. How is iced coffee healthier? I just need to rewind and what? Like so how is iced coffee better for your stomach health?
The heat of the acid isn't as good. Like the, I think the heat of the acidity like does something to it. When it's cold, it's not as acidic. There's some science behind it, but I'm not a dietitian.
All right. If you're a dietitian out there and you're listening to this, please email us and tell us if cold or if iced coffee is more healthy than hot coffee. I always just assumed it's what goes into the coffee, right? It's just if you put sugar and cream and whipped cream and all that stuff, like that's when you get into more of the health conversation.
I mean, most people aren't putting whipped cream into their coffee, Sam.
I told you, it's an afternoon treat, okay? Jeez. And I do it like rarely, like probably once a month at
Oh my most. God, I'm just picturing you getting a coffee with a whipped cream on top.
I am confident in myself enough to go get a whipped cream iced beverage. Thank you very much. I have no problem with that. I'd be embarrassed.
I'd be embarrassed to pick that up for someone.
You think that's like a children's drink or something?
Yes. I didn't even get that when I was a child. When I was like going to the mall and like getting those drinks with the whipped cream on top, I was like, no whipped cream. Thank you.
You haven't lived. This is a weird conversation because we just started by talking about the generational divide where I drink hot coffee and you don't. And then we flipped it into I drink drinks with whipped cream on top and you don't. I think Gen Z, I'm worried for Gen Z. Well, like what are the younger generations? What is their attitude toward food? Anyway.
We wouldn't know because I'm not a Gen Z.
Old man. You might as well be. You're borderline. You're pretty close.
I'm not. Somebody called me a cusper and I got so mad the other day.
Ooh, that's a weird word.
Cusper. I used to work at a store called Cusp.
Is that what it's referring to?
It was like the cusp
of a generation?
No, it was like the cusp between like one, like high fashion and like lower income. I can't think
You're
of the
really
word.
You're really trying to say this sensitively without sounding like a jerk, aren't you?
Between like lower brands, like between higher brands and lower brands. It was like the in-between brand, but it was priced at like $400 Gotcha. Which was still expensive.
Yeah. Jeez. Okay. We don't need to talk about fashion. What's up? What other thing can we talk about with restaurants? Should we talk about Yum and the Mexican pizza now?
Heck yeah.
Okay. Do you want to start?
Let's talk about Mexican pizza. I love Taco Bell.
You're our in-house Taco Bell aficionado.
Yes, I love Taco Bell. I think about ordering it every day. I don't.
This has happened in a short time frame, by the way, because I'm pretty sure I knew you at a time when you had never had Taco Bell before.
You did, yes. Leanne and I had gone out one night, and then the next day we went to the office, and we ordered Taco Bell in the office, and that was my first time eating Taco Bell. And that was maybe 6 months ago. Changed my life.
So have you had the Mexican pizza?
It isn't back yet. It was only available for two weeks because it then sold out.
It sold out. Right. So you didn't get it before it sold out.
So I didn't get it in those 2 weeks because I thought I had time.
Well, I think it sold out in a week, right? It was coming back for 2 weeks and then it sold out in a week.
It was coming back for six months.
Oh, okay. So then it sold out in 2 weeks.
Got it. Sold out in 2 weeks. Comes back on September 15th. Good.
Let's just talk about this because I think, well, Taco Bell is the master of novelty items and the menu item as the marketing platform, right? Because Doritos Locos Tacos, one of the most historically great fast food items of all time in terms of they sold billions of them. It just totally recharged sales at Taco Bell. And I think this is another example of it where they can really develop. My kids are screaming downstairs, so for all those who are hearing little children screaming, that's what's going on here. And now everything makes sense when I talk about the kids and the directions. Anyway, so Mexican pizza, another example of Taco Bell really winning with a menu item as the marketing platform. The whole Doja Cat lyric tweet. I'm gonna show my age here. I don't really
Mexican
know what happened, but Doja
pizza is the pizza for
Doja
you
Cat
and
sang
me.
About it.
Yeah, she rapped about it.
Oh, okay. Okay, I'm sorry. I didn't even know Doja Cat was a woman. Okay, yeah, here we are. Old man alert. But Doja Cat really helping putting Mexican pizza back on the map when they brought it back. Anyway, one thing I really want to call out here that I think is so smart as it relates to Taco Bell and its marketing is that the loyalty members had access to the Mexican pizza first and that their loyalty membership went up 10% as a result of the Mexican pizza. Like, how smart is that? I mean, that's where we're at now, right? I mean, we've been talking about this a lot as it relates to loyalty, that loyalty is no longer the punch card. Loyalty anymore is about experiences, and it's about exclusivity and giving your loyalty members very exclusive access to things. And here you go. Here's a prime example of it. This is up 10%, might be hundreds of thousands of people because it's millions of people strong in their loyalty program, and all because of this one item, the Mexican pizza. So not everybody can do this like Taco Bell because that whole idea of the novelty menu item, it fits in their branding, doesn't fit for most other restaurants. But like, I don't know, it's just there's so much to learn from what Taco Bell does with its menu development, its R&D, and then how it really weaves it into its marketing that I just think it should be a case study for all restaurateurs out there.
Yeah, and I'm so curious about how they're going to reintroduce this. I mean, they did this like huge marketing push in the summer that was like, they had Doja Cat, they had Dolly Parton, they had this musical plan with the people who did the Bridgerton musical, who are currently being sued, but that's a whole other thing.
Bridgerton musical? What?
Did you watch Bridgerton?
You know what, just... I did the first season. I'm sorry. I hated it, but
that's unsurprising.
Anyway. Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, so they had this whole like, musical planned for the pizza, for the Mexican pizza. That never happened because it sold out. And so they had this whole marketing plan and it never came to fruition because of all of these supply chain issues.
Okay.
I did put that in quotes because I don't know how well it was thought through on Taco Bell's end. They say that they have thought through the supply chain issues to get this accomplished so it will be on the menu full time. They told Joanna that they have done it, that they have done their homework.
That's good.
She assured me on First Bite that they have done their homework, that they are ready to go for this.
Well, it does sort of harken back to Popeye's chicken sandwich too, right? Which sold out in super quickly and sort of similar thing, which they just had not planned for. It did not have enough supply. Of course, that was 3 years ago in the before times and supply chain wasn't as much of an issue. So all the more so now you got to plan for that kind of stuff. But just another example of marketing as a, menu win and finding ways to just sort of capture that cultural moment as Taco Bell is so good at doing.
Yeah. And I mean, like I didn't even know about the Mexican pizza before. I mean, I wasn't even a Taco Bell consumer before, but now I'm like, I have to try the Mexican pizza. And it doesn't even look appealing in the photos. The photos look horrifying.
I got to say, nothing about it appeals to me either. That's no knock on Taco Bell. I like Taco Bell like the next person. But yeah, it doesn't jump out to me. Maybe just because pizza is pretty sacred in my life. Pizza to me should
every
be
every Friday night and Sunday
thing.
Morning. I got that.
Friday night. That's right. Well, Friday night and Sunday night. I mean,
and Sunday night. Now, Sunday you don't eat morning. Cold leftovers for breakfast?
No, because I got to save it for Sunday night when we do our leftover Sunday night, Sunday night pizza dinner.
Oh, I grew up on cold pizza for breakfast.
I mean, don't get me wrong. It's not like I've never done cold pizza for breakfast. Of course I've done that, but it depends on how much pizza's left after Friday night.
Mm. I had pizza for dinner last night. Pizza for dinner last night was delicious.
Well, good for you. What kind of pizza? Local? Chain?
Local. Prince Street Pizza here in New York City. I had a spicy vodka slice and a pepperoni slice, and they were delicious. I took my friend there, and he was like, this is the best pizza I've ever had. And he's in the restaurant business, so it was
I remember was having good. Their pizza. I think I told you this before, but the one time I had their pizza, it was hyped as the best pizza in New York, and I ate it, and I was like, okay.
I don't think you had the right slices. It was fine. You got to be told which slices to get.
Okay.
You got to get specific slices. You got to get the square slices. You got to get the spicy vodka and the pepperoni. It's very specific which ones you got to get.
Oh, shout out to my friends at Fusion here in Columbus. I did eat pizza with them last weekend, as I noted on the pod last week. And Wizard of Zaw is a brand that they now own here in Columbus, a pizza brand. And ooh, it is good. It is so good. But I remember that because it's a square slice. Same idea is square slice, you know, really a lot of attention toward the crust. Anyway, recommend it if you're here in Ohio.
I don't really plan on being there in Ohio, but I'm sure some of our listeners are.
I have nothing to say outside of you coastal elitist.
Do you plan on flying me out to Ohio?
No.
See? Then I'm not going out to Ohio.
You could drive across it. Go drive across the country.
You know Ohio's I don't know how to
like
drive.
An 8-hour drive from New York. I do know that. Anyway, should we talk about Chipotle? Because I did want to talk about Chipotle, too.
Yeah, let's talk about Chipotle. What do you want to say about Chipotle?
Buttoning up the yum thing, Taco Bell, lots to talk about there, of course, but Pizza Hut and KFC not doing so good.
No, they're not.
Because of a variety of factors, KFC having issues with its China business. So this is globally, it's not doing great. China really affecting KFC because they had a lot of COVID shutdowns recently. But also Pizza Hut and delivery driver shortage continues to hurt them, although they have embraced third party much more so than others, namely Domino's. But Chipotle, if we moved right along to Chipotle, sales up 10%, Chipotle humming right along. But Brian Nichol talking about how they want to increase store throughput because they don't think they're doing as good as they can be. Brian Nichol, he of the removing friction from the guest experience. He was the first person I think who ever said that to me. I don't know if that might have existed before him, but I know he's really into that. Let's just say. And so that's what they're doing. They're trying to focus even more so on the guest experience and making it go as quick as possible. They did note that newer employees, that part of the challenge is with newer employees who are not as trained for the rush can slow things down. So labor issues having a direct consequence to business there. And their digital orders are slipping. And that's a big deal because digital orders are bigger average checks. So as people come more into the restaurants, that affects sales in a unique way. Holly, can you tell I did my homework?
I was just about to say, it's so nice you. when you take notes.
I know. I told Holly before we hit record that I was not really aware of what was going on in the industry this week because I've kind of had my head down. But I did my homework. So here we are.
I know. I wrote an outline this week. I even gave you some Chipotle hints. Too. I even gave you some hints this week.
I'm taking over.
I wrote a little bit more in this outline because I kind of had a feeling you weren't paying attention this week. I gave you little notes. I was like, except in the outline, I just wrote Mexican pizza's back! Exclamation point.
I did see that actually. Yeah, usually you're better about like actually saying more about what we're going to talk about this week. You're like, I don't know, earnings. So had to put some effort in.
You did, and you did a very good job. I'm very proud of you.
Thank you.
You did a great job. I mean, I think we covered earnings. Was there anything else you wanted to say? Did you have any other notes that you took? I don't want to step on your toes.
Those are my bullet points. Chipotle did talk about more training as well, actually. So if we could sum up what a lot of people are talking about is how labor is directly impacting the business and how they want to do a better job training their people to improve the overall experience to enhance the opportunities for revenue. How do you like that?
That was very corporate speak.
Thank you.
I feel like that's not the answer I was expecting.
What? I could do corporate speak with the best of them. I'm here for you.
Okay, well, let's talk about something happy, like we have been talking about, okay, to end the podcast. This is how we end it now, with something happy. And our happy thing this week is that our plant-based project that we've been doing, our plant-based showdown, went live this week.
It did.
So it's, which plant-based chain do you think is going to be the first national plant-based chain? And so we have a contest running on our Instagram and our LinkedIn. So on Instagram, we are Nations Restaurant News, and we're Nations Restaurant News on our LinkedIn as well. So go and follow us and go to our post and go vote for which of the 10 plant-based chains you think is going to be the first to go national. We have stories up on all of them and videos on our website. We interview the founders or leaders of all of these chains. Go learn more about them. They're very exciting. They're really cool chains. They're all doing something innovative, interesting. I combined innovative and interesting into one new word.
No, nope, innovating is still a word.
Oh, is it?
You think you're so special coming up with a new word that already exists. But
I'm so continue. Special. But anyways, so that went live. Please go vote. It's a really exciting project. We will announce a winner, the Reader's Choice winner, at the end of the month. And so it's just a really exciting project that we're doing. We're excited to see what you guys think. We haven't really done something like this before where we've asked you guys for your opinions on things via social media. So we're excited to see what you guys are thinking, are really engaged in, what kind of brands you guys are looking for. So go vote.
Yeah, and Holly's being modest, but Holly is really the brains behind this whole thing. So kudos to Holly. You put together a fantastic content package, and it's very exciting to see that there's been a lot of engagement with it already. I kind of have a hunch who's going to win based on what I've seen on Instagram, but I won't say here and spoil it. But yeah, I mean, emphasizing just the fact that, you know, well, and we position this as New York and LA, not because that's where all the plant-based innovation is happening. It's just where more of the plant-based innovation is happening. Again, as resident flyover country resident on this podcast, I am sensitive to not all special things happen in New York and LA. It's just how we positioned it this time because that's where a lot of it's happening. But I think it's also important to say that, you know, we're not just highlighting one-offs with an interesting product. We're highlighting 10 brands that have genuinely expressed their interest to go national. And I think we're on a cusp of, you know, that point where we could conceivably have a national plant-based brand, and these are the brands that have the best shot at it. So yes, go check it out. LinkedIn, Instagram, weigh in. If there's somebody out there not in New York or LA, just let us know about it too, because obviously there's plenty of other plant-based brands out there that might go national and we want to highlight them too. So send us your feedback if you can.
Yeah, so that's our happy news of the week. Do you have anything else happy to say, Sam?
What else happy? I'm riding my bike 57 miles this weekend.
Wow.
Yes. I am riding in the Pelotonia here in Columbus, which is a bike event to raise money for cancer research. And so I'll be doing that on Saturday morning. So while you're brunching in New York and drinking your mimosas or whatever, just know my butt is going to be hurting because it'll be on a bike for about 5 hours. So that's what
I'm doing. Excuse me. I will be going to Pilates, and then I will be taking a train to Philadelphia for my uncle's birthday on Saturday. So that will be my plan.
Productive. Well.
Yes. But yeah. Good for you for biking 57 miles. I'm very proud of you.
Thank you. Thank you. Yep. Riding with my dad and my brother-in-law. So I have been preparing for that all week and am eager to have it done because I rode 30 miles last weekend and my body is still tired because, oh, listeners, I am not a super in shape person. So riding this much is not always the, easiest. But anyway, I'm happy to do it. So very good cause, raising money for cancer research.
Yes, a very good cause. We are all very proud of you. I will speak for the listeners and say we are all very proud of you.
Thank you.
You have a community behind you, so.
I was looking for affirmation. Thank you.
It's fine. I know you well enough at this point to know when you need affirmation.
I think we also need Leanne for brevity because we have just been droning on and on and on. Where the poor listener is like, guys, just go to the interview.
Well, I will go to the interview because this week's interview is Green District's Jordan Depke and Chris Furlow. And we talked about what it's like to be, you know, an emerging brand in the health space. And so they talked a lot about what it's like to have health foods and be in middle America. And have this healthy concept. And it was really interesting. And so we talked a lot about that. So enjoy the interview. And thank you.
Are they in my neck of the woods? Am I making it up that they're in my neck of the woods? Are they around here somewhere? Or is it like Indiana, Kentucky, something?
They're in your neck of the woods.
Sorry, I'm throwing you off.
No, they are. You did throw me off. But
we create good things in the middle of the country, too.
And see, I can interview people in the middle of the country, too.
Good job, Holly.
Thank you. So, listener, enjoy that. And thank you so much, Sam, for joining me today.
Thanks, Holly.
This podcast is sponsored by Stratus Foods. Stratus Foods is the industry partner you can depend on when you're looking for the very best in fats and oils. Our team of expert researchers, developers, and innovators have helped countless businesses just like yours bring their most delicious menus to life. With products that are reliable, sustainable, and ready to meet any challenge, you can fry, bake, saute, and grill with confidence. Stratus Foods, we've got you covered. All right, so why don't you guys tell me a little bit about your concept?
This is Jordan Depke, president and CEO of Green District. Green District is a fast casual salad wrap grain bowl. Everybody's green, everybody's part of the same district. And we just wanted to create a more accessible way to eat healthy on the go for everybody, whether you're 600 pounds or you're 6% body fat, you're a part of Green District, just come start your health journey with us. It's a scratch kitchen, over 50 ingredients, 11 homemade dressings in-house, no preservatives. It's all brought in for the same way.
That's great. And so you guys have some really massive growth plans. Can we talk a little bit about that?
Of course, yes. Yeah. So Green District started in 2017, and you know, a lot of hard work to get where it was, and this was just me and Jordan and some friends, like, kind of duct taping it together. We knew what we wanted it to be, and we had a vision of just being a better neighborhood place where you can go eat healthy on the go, basically. And from the very first day we opened, we had people come to us saying, "This is cool. I want one. How do I get one? You know, I want to buy one of these for my door. I want to license one in another state," or whatever that scenario was. And we're like, okay, so how do we do that? And then we looked into franchising, and we looked into other methods. We'll fast forward a couple of years where we landed a private equity deal back in late 2019, early 2020. So perfect timing or nightmare timing, we actually inked that deal March 1st, 2020. So all geared up, excited, and then 16 days later, everything closed down. So since then, we've had, I guess, a bit of a blessing in that regard because we got to lay our foundations. You know, we really dialed into our tech stack, really dialed into our marketing and branding. You know, what are the foundations we want to grow this on? So we know the people want it. We know it's a good product. It's just getting it out to the masses. So now, fast forward to 2022, we have 9 stores open and we have another 20-ish in development currently. And so we want to have those open by end of year, early next year for sure. And that's just to get the foundation started. So we're a Midwest based company, but we're opening up in the West, Utah, Colorado, Arizona. We're going to be opening up some in the South and Florida as well, just to test out these different markets, bring different concepts, and honestly bring local flavors to each one of those green districts as well.
When you say local flavor, can you kind of describe that for me?
Of course, Jordan, you know what we want to do. It's fun because we want it to be local to the neighborhood as much as we can. So, for instance, you know, in Louisville, it's a bourbon city. It's famous for bourbon, so we want to have a bourbon venue. In Cincinnati, even the Midwest market, we want to have, you know, what's famous to them? Is it Skyline Chili? Is it Grupo's chips on top of your salad? You know, in the South and Florida, are we going to have a lot more? It's a lot more vegetarian down there. It's a lot more different cultures and flavors. And so we don't want to just pigeonhole everyone into the same salad or same options. Out West, you know, there's different things we're going to do that are local to that store.
I think for me, the best way to describe it is, you know how when you visit a city, you want to go to a local brewery, or you want to catch a local sporting event, or, you know, see a performing arts show because they have a theater that's popular. There's just all these little gems that are hidden in each one of the cities that we're going to. And so to Chris's point, we kind of take a local flair and we incorporate it into our menu. We're super blessed because our chef trained at Le Cordon Bleu, worked at Wolfgang Puck for 10 years. He opened 24 restaurants in 4 countries. His name is Rob Rice, and he's a culinary genius. What we love about him is he took his time and he worked in the Midnight Mission and fed over a million, you know, homeless and recovering folks for 3 straight years. And he did that out of the kindness of his heart. But, you know, what he did each week was he had a new menu because he would get in a shipment of leftover food because it was the feed a homeless encampment basically on Skid Row in L.A. And so the creativity that he has on top of his culinary skills, he's just very experienced and well-traveled. And so Chris and I kind of embody the same thing in our life and our lifestyles, especially with our families. We're always on the road. We're always traveling. We're always exposing them to new things and showing them that, hey, the community that we live in is great. Yet there are millions of communities around the world that are just as great. And the more you learn about those communities and the more you take the good things from those communities and implement it in the one that you live in, the better you are as a person. And so Chris hailing from England and me hailing from all over the United States, but kind of a ghetto redneck country boy from Kentucky, we just really admire the different communities and the different palates that they all have. So example, Colorado, we're going to do a green hash chili dressing, and we're going to put hash chilies on a salad. He mentioned the 513, which we affectionately name the salads after the area code of that area, that community, in that city. And so the 513 incorporates a Grippo's barbecue sauce and also some crunched up Grippo's chips on top of it. So whatever that community tells us is them, we go in and incorporate that in the menu. Like I said, we owe a lot of that to Rob Ross because he takes that flavor and he makes it in on salad. Who would have thought Grippo's potato chips on a salad would be great, but it's our most popular seller in Cincinnati. So I think when you open up to the community and you let them know how important they are to you, especially as quote unquote a chain that's coming in, we've had really good results with it.
It's that collaboration. That's what we're going to be big on as we grow, is collaboration locally, nationally, and everything else in between. Because I think it's important, you know, to keep things as local as you can. And even like a suburban store versus an urban store, there isn't a salad across the global entity of Green District, if you will. It's local to each store and individually. So there might be more of a fruit-based salad, might be the top seller in a suburban store, but it might be like a Cobb salad, a downtown store. So it's interesting to see, and we're always learning and evolving.
How do you manage the supply chain for that? I mean, that must be so hard to have to balance all of that between each store and each community that you're in, to have to balance a supply chain between one menu item and another.
Yeah, it absolutely is. We've been very blessed. Like we said, you know, we owe a lot to the Castellan Group for the money that they put in, and Sean and Scott Smith and Barry Brock as the managing director of that family office. And so they've allowed us to make some really strategic hires.
you know, it's been kind of a juggling act because, you know, we don't have the money to throw at payroll, and you got to watch your burn as you're expanding as fast as, you know, as Green District is. And so we were blessed and fortunate to have one of US Foods' vice presidents came on board with us. He has 14 years experience with US Foods, and we say in our company, we love people, we love them out. Well, we love this one in. And it was really neat. It was a relationship that our chef Rob, that I mentioned, the guy named Mitch Huff. And so he has a great reputation in the US Foods team and has been able to connect us nationally. And what Green District strives to do is, you know, obviously we want the consistent product, yet we have a disparity in menus from region to region because we want to make sure that local flair is celebrated. And so a shout out to US Foods because they've jumped on board with us. You know, we can save this for another podcast or another time, but we're really big on urban farming, but working with the broadliners, we feel like, you know, it's a misnomer that you can come into a city and aggregate all these small local farmers and think that they can afford to do it, especially when you're buying the amount of food the Green District is buying. We're the number one buyer in the Ohio Valley right now. You know, we moved from Sysco to US Foods, and honestly, we moved because US Foods said, we want to grow with you nationally. We want to grow our organic side. And if you guys are into urban farming and you want to talk about that in cities, we're happy to do it. So we feel like the distribution that US Foods has set up nationally is really great for our growth, and it keeps that consistency amongst the products. Does that answer that question, Holly?
Yes, it does. I'm actually really curious about this urban farming initiative. Can you explain it a little bit more?
Absolutely. And Chris and I are, number one, we are passionate, you know, about each other and caring for each other as friends, right? I know his lovely wife well, he knows mine well, we know each other's kids. I'm the godfather of his middle child. So for us, it was all relationship driven. And, you know, we were blessed with, you know, whether it be the educational background, I'm only the second person in my family to finish college. You know, Chris had a father who was successful in business in England and taught him a lot. And, you know, Chris is a world traveler, worked for PricewaterhouseCooper, been in Australia, New Zealand, all over. And so relationships, education, and workforce development are something that we had the privilege of experiencing because of our, you know, our parents or mentors or family members, whoever that may be. We realized, though, in a lot of cities, in the pandemic especially, exposed a lot of this, you know, in these urban areas, there's not a lot of workforce development. And there definitely is not a lot of healthy eating. And the majority of these urban areas are what I would call a food desert. And so the 2017 Tax Act was what kind of allowed Chris and I to solidify this investment, you know, one of many, many reasons. Yet the opportunities and developments are something we're very passionate about. And so we've been working with a group here who for now, you know, needs to remain nameless. Yet we're very connected with the city, and the city is all about it. And we're very close to developing a container and a warehouse farming system with some groups that are already out there doing it. And so they're going to use our market here in the basically the tri-state, i.e. Midwest area of Indianapolis, Cincinnati, and Louisville to test building something. But our main goal is not necessarily the sustainability of the food initially, because, you know, broadliners like US Food, it's hard to compete with those prices because they operate off such slim margins, and it's a volume game. So for us, the urban farming initiative is to obviously grow into sustainable food in urban markets. Yet right now, we think the biggest plug for us is a workforce development initiative and to create a central kitchen of sorts that can pick off of that food. And then, you know, given that they aren't going to be able to supply out of X amount of containers or a small warehouse, we can then partner with a broadliner like US Foods, and they guarantee that they buy up all of our produce. And then we partner with other local restaurant groups. Like we said, we humbly come into your community. We want to partner with you. And in each of these towns, they have local groups that love to buy sustainably. They just can't necessarily afford to. So we're in the infancy stages. However, we've got a lot of great momentum. And I think most importantly, we have really important partnerships that are already inked.
I will say this as well. I don't know if it's come across yet that Jordan and I both don't have restaurant backgrounds. but honestly, we take that as... in our confidence, honestly, because we like to
manage.
Yeah, we like to look at things from a different perspective. And I think that means we can move the needle a little bit more quicker. Because it's a lot of the times we come up to think, well, that's just the way it's done. You know what I mean? Like, well, but why don't we try it different? Well, that causes an issue. Well, let's figure out the issue and let's move forward. And then 18 months later, we've solved it, we're moving forward, and then that's it's actually a lot more efficient, or whatever that reason is. And one thing we are
extremely passionate about is holding down the brand, making sure we know what we're doing as a brand. You know, the as we always say, our food sells itself. The food is phenomenal. It's delicious. It's unreal. It's super healthy for you. It's amazing. It's perfect in our eyes. And a lot of people share that same sentiment. So it's, to us, it's now building the brand, building the awareness, is getting the food in more people's hands, so to speak. So that's one thing we're very, very passionate about, is building the brand.
And so how did the two of you meet? You talked about your close relationship. I'm curious how the two of you met.
Everything revolves around football or soccer, as it were. So I don't even know what year it was. 2009, 2010.
It was the fall of 2009.
There you go. So I was in my spare time helping out coaching high school soccer, football to me, over here where I lived.
We're just going to say football, Holly. It's got to be football. He deserves it. They started the game. We respect it. We understand it. So any of the listeners that don't understand that, they're going to have a Google about football. It's not American. It's football.
There we go. So I was coaching high school, and I was coaching this kid for 4 years, Max, his name was. And then Jordan was living out in Colorado, playing soccer professionally out there. And then he decided to move back. This is where his family's from, the Midwest. And to get closer to his cousin, he wanted to say, hey, do you mind if I help out and coach from the sidelines? And we was like, sure, we're as looking for help. And so we started coaching together. We just kind of started hanging out on the sidelines saying, hey, you're cool. I like your vibe and stuff. And then we just became good mates. And then we started became best mates. And then we just started over those, I don't know, 8 to 10 years, just like started saying, hey, we need to come up with an idea. We need to come up with a business idea so we can have more excuses to hang out. And that's how we met. And then everything we do does revolve around football. We feel like, you know, either if it's at team phone calls, some of our suggestions and plays and all this good stuff, we're very, very passionate about it. So that's how we met and continue to grow.
And how do you go from football to restaurants?
So I have to add a couple here caveats. So obviously Chris is extremely charming and has a wonderful accent. Anybody that's in the football world in America, if anybody has an accent and they want to talk to you about football, you listen. And so we just kind of fell fast in love together. And his lovely wife at the time was like, I think you guys just want to make a business because you want an excuse to drink beer together. And honestly, if we're being honest, that's why we wanted to do it. Yet we're still waiting for that first beer. We occasionally get one on trips together, but it seems like it's short-lived, and then we go right back into work. So the segue from football to restaurants was, I think, you know, I'm 40 and Chris is just, you know, a little bit younger than me. But I think that we were kind of that middle generation that wasn't quite, you know, raised on a cell phone, but professionally had a cell phone. And so healthy eating and nutrition, the awareness really started in our late teens and early 20s. And so we both have played soccer professionally, as you mentioned. And so I didn't really have the nutrition department that the kids have these days now at these Division I schools. And even at these large Division I schools, they're still really behind the times. I mean, no shade on Louisville, but we've got a meeting tomorrow with the nutrition department because they're asking us what they should do differently to help their athletes eat better. And so I think Chris and I had a passion about healthy living. And so, of course, all things in moderation, we still have fun and we still like our beer, yet we eat Green District 4 to 6 times a week. I still eat pizza 2 to 3 times a week because it's my guilty pleasure. However, we felt like growing up in the world of football, we didn't see a lot of nutritional options. And, you know, I'm a kid from the Midwest and the, you know, slash South, i.e. Kentucky and Ohio is where I was raised. And so, you know, I watched my parents, you know, struggle and learn and listen. And, you know, I proudly want to say, and my mom and dad, since we've been doing this journey, literally just in the last year, have lost 42 pounds and 28 pounds respectively. And so I think we just saw a hole for fast, healthy, casual stuff. I was in insurance for 15 years and we'd cater pizza and Jimmy John's and Qdoba and Chipotle, and they're all delicious. It's just our sales team would fall asleep in the second half of the day and they wouldn't be energized. And, you know, needless to say, in the Midwest and the South, there just isn't a lot of healthy lifestyle alternatives here. So we felt like, shoot, if we can do it in the top 5 most unhealthy state of Kentucky, we think we can make it anywhere.
Yeah, it was basically a selfish need to eat healthy on the go, because there wasn't much out there that was truly doing it. As you know, and we looked at different concepts out in New York or California, and it was like, why? That's not fair. Why do they get them and we don't? You know, why is the middle of the country completely looked over? And that's where we figured, hey, let's try it out here. And like I say, as soon as we opened it up, people were coming to us saying, hey, we want to invest, or here's a check. How do I get involved? So it kind of just evolved, honestly. And here we are.
And so tell me about the food. I'm so curious to hear. You've been describing everything. I love healthy food. Tell me all about it.
The food is delicious. But I would say, again, we've had limited restaurant backgrounds of chefs and whatnot. To us, what's important is the sources. So everything is made in-house daily. You know, we get all our greens, lettuces, spinaches, kale, all this good stuff. But what makes us different, I feel like, is A, we chop our salads. B, it's completely custom. So everything is custom. Well, I think one of our most popular salads is build your own still, or a customization of said legendary salad. But it's the sauces that really dominate, I think, our brand. And that's where we want to be passionate about, because it's not, you know, how do you cook your food or how do you prepare it? It's what goes on top of it. And that's what we always want to, I don't want to say define our brand, but makes us different. It's the food that just tastes good. And that's what we always say. If we can help someone start their healthy journey by just coming over to Green District, you know, get a wrap to start with, get a grain bowl to start with, get a salad. Because you think, some people think salad in their head, they just think, lettuce and grilled chicken and maybe some, you know, tasteless vinaigrette. So it's always an afterthought at a restaurant. So that's where we wanted to put the flavor profile first. And that's what we've been very passionate about. And honestly, like Jordan said, I eat there pretty much every day. I know a lot of people eat there 2 times a day. And it gets very addictive very quickly. And once you start mixing the different dressings, we just released a new buffalo dressing, which is phenomenal. But if you mix that up with some of the other ones, oh my goodness, it's amazing.
Yeah, I think, Holly, it's, you know, to describe the food, again, not coming from any type of culinary background for either of us yet. I was in insurance for 15 years. I've eaten at the finest steakhouses you can imagine. And, you know, a big part of my job was to wine and dine people. So I feel like I have a palate that understands what's good and what's not, yet creating it for me. So that's, again, where, you know, where our culinary team is so amazing. And we have 2 full-time chefs on board. Rob is one of them. Shelby's the other one. She's a pastry chef by trade, makes amazing vegan chocolate chip cookies. Pick those up on Thursday, National Chocolate Chip Cookie Day. That being said, to Chris's point, if you think about the biggest names in food, what do you admire the most about them? Yeah, the consistency of their burger or the consistency of their chicken or whatever. Yeah, you know, the chicken sandwich wars kind of showed us that Zaxby's is great, Cane's is great, Popeye's is great, Chick-fil-A is great. And, you know, we joke about all those, yet I can tell you one thing. Everybody knows their favorite sauce from every one of those restaurants.
Yeah.
So we admire a Buffalo Wild Wings. I mean, who does not love their teriyaki or their Caribbean jerk or on the Parmesan garlic? Go down the line. You go to Chick-fil-A, I mean, they call it Chick-fil-A sauce, right? I mean, you think about an In-N-Out. Where I think it gets cool and what I love about our brand is that you learn something new every day from the people that work in the stores. So to Chris's point, you see McDonald's now finally doing the Max. Well, In-N-Out's been doing that for years with animal style, right? I think what's so important to us is creating that cultural phenomenon that makes people just want to be part of Green District. And I have to give a shout out to Deanne Turner, who was the HR director for Chick-fil-A for 30 plus years. And she told me, she said, Jordan, I'm standing on a corner of Miami. And she told me on the cell phone, she said, Jordan, you're creating a lifestyle brand. A lot of these restaurants didn't do that. If they could unravel it and start over and do it, they would, because they realize how important that is. So to Chris's point, I was just in with the amazing Emma at our Brownsboro location. Cause I was out there. I had my 4-year-old with me. We had a doctor's appointment out there. And so we took him there and she brought up the forbidden fruit with our blueberry vinaigrette and then to mix it with our Thai peanut dressing. And she said, it almost tastes like a peanut butter jelly in a salad. And I was like, that sounds gross. And she said, it's phenomenal. And you know, that's what we love about it is the combination of these dressings. But to Chris's point, the food is delicious because it's fresh, but you know, we say God, karma, universe, whatever you believe. Broccoli tastes like broccoli since the beginning of time. So it's kale. But when you drench it in our delicious dressings and sauces, it gives it a new effect. And so we think the secret menu hacks and things like that are something we're really going to play up in the future. But all that comes from our team. All that comes from our family. That's the Green District teammates. So hope that answers that question for you.
No, that was great. And it made me very hungry, I will say, even though I just ate. So I'm definitely looking forward to you guys coming out to New York.
I will say this as well. I was just at a wedding in a different state over the weekend. And there was a 16-year-old there who his favorite restaurant is Green District. And his dad was talking to me about it. He goes, yeah, I like Green District. It tastes nice and stuff. But the kid loved it because of the branding inside. He loved the sauces. We have a bunch of sneakers over our wall. We have local art in our store. And a 16-year-old in high school, he goes there 2 or 3 times a week. His mom picks him up. He goes, where do you want to go to eat? He goes, I want to go to Green District. That to me is what the target demographic we want to really hit. If we can be cool enough for the high school kids and the college kids to really like us and stand out, like I say, the parents or the people that are looking for healthy food, they'll find us anyway. And so that's what I'm really happy and excited about is once we get that wink or that thumbs up from, you know, the younger generation, because they're going to find healthy options. But if they can dig it, so to speak, I'm going to be happy.
We all want to be cool enough for Gen Z.
I know, right? I'm still cool, right, son?
And Gen Alpha is next. That they're even scarier.
That's true.
They're going to have all the buying power.
We say all the time, they're more educated than us because they've had a library in their hands since they were born. I had to get my mom to drive me to mine.
I did too. So don't worry. Well, thank you guys so much for talking to me about Green District. It's been so great. I've had such a great time. Thank you so much.
Holly, thank you so much. Like you say, if anyone wants to check us out, we're on gdsalads.com or just search Green District. Like you say, we're coming to Arizona. We're coming to Colorado, Utah, Florida. Where else? Ohio, Nashville. We're all over the place this year. So we look forward to meeting a lot of people out there in the business as well.
And I bet they look forward to meeting you, getting some healthy food in them.
There you go. Thank you so much for your time, Holly. We appreciate it.